just really excited about what they're building. I'm really excited about the passion, the mission, the vision. You know, I can feel it in that first call. And I think it's tough when it's like, when you don't know, right? Either you know right away. So there are also cases where I know right away, you know, this is not for me. Whatever it might be, it might not be the founder, it might be the market, it might be the sector, it might be something, right? But usually I very quickly know. And sometimes I write a check and I'm like, do I even have the cash to write this check?
This is Female Business Angel Podcast. My name is Tina, and I'm here again today at the Scene Podcast Studio. Thank you, Scene, for having us. Today, I will be speaking to Dipali. I'm not going to try to pronounce her name because I will get it wrong, but she will tell us how it's pronounced properly. Dipali is an absolute force of nature. She doesn't really need a surname because she's the brand really in the UK when it comes to female business angel investing and female founder support. She does everything she does with a huge amount of passion and drive, and we couldn't be more thrilled to have her here. So thank you, Dipali, for being here.
There we go. We're recording. And yeah, so Dipali, tell us about your life. Maybe first, tell us how to pronounce your name properly.
I love that routine. Most people get it wrong. It's Dipali. It's after the Indian festival of lights, the Hindu festival of lights called Diwali. I was born on Diwali, so my parents took a shortcut and just called me Dipali. Rather, my aunt in India. In India, the aunt really names you. And the last name is Nangia, which most people pronounce as Nangia, but it's incorrect. So it's Dipali Nangia. There you have it.
Nice, nice. So were you actually born in India?
Yeah, born in India, lived there for 18 years, went to university in the States, went to work on Wall Street right after. Then on the growth equity side, then in the corporate world, getting very old now, Bettine, in the corporate world, really learning about the operational side of the business before really going freelance on my own.
Great, great. And so how did you get into angel investing?
When I left the city, I ran, helped the local government set up a credit union to tackle some of the high interest rate lending on the housing estates, on the social housing estates of North Kensington, where I was working essentially with women, teaching them about savings and how they could prevent loan payday lending and loan sharks. And at the end of that, when we set that up, one of the counselors asked me if I could help launch an angel syndicate, given my background in investing. So I helped launch an angel syndicate, which I ended up running for 4 years for the Kensington and Chelsea local council. And that's how I started, I got involved in the early stage ecosystem in London. Yeah. And started helping female founders, really, because that was a topic very close to my heart. And started doing some small angel checks, but really also getting some advisory equity in return for the advice and the help that I was giving them on their pitch decks and their fundraisers. And until one day over a coffee, I met Sophia Benz, and she came along and, she asked me, she said, we actually had a common investment, and therefore I had reached out to her because I wanted to get her thoughts on marketing for this portfolio company. And she asked me, she said, have you ever heard of the Atomico Angel program? And I hadn't. And 6 months later, she took a punt on me and said, I'd love for you to join the angel program. And that's when I really started doing, larger angel checks. They invited me to join for that 1 year. That was the first year of the pandemic through which I did smaller checks because I wanted to, I wanted to support more female founders who were struggling with fundraising during COVID. And then at the end of that year, they invited me back for another 2 years. I actually owe her a lot because it's really what turbocharged my angel investing career.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. So, I mean, it's one of the things that's so, incredible about you is that you're just so intrinsically driven by, I call it the female cause.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that we share. And because you started an angel group around that as well, right?
Yeah. So I co-founded an angel community. So it's not a syndicate. Wanted to create a free angel community to create more female angel investors. And it's 4 of us. It's David, Ella, Kristen, and me got together. And we're about 300 angels now. 70% female, 30% men. The original intent was to create more angels in the ecosystem, because we kept running up against the same women when it came to angel investing. Yeah. And wanted to create a platform where women could come together and learn from each other, invest with each other. And we wanted it to be inclusive of men, because they, you know, they own so much of the capital. Yeah. And we have some phenomenal male angels in the community who are investing a lot into our female founders. And on the other side, it's a marketplace concept, and we have female founders applying for capital. But again, it's not curated in the sense that, you know, anybody can apply through the website, but also the angels in the community can send forward female founders, and whoever wants to jump on the deal gets, you know, does the due diligence, invites other almas, and that's how we invest. So that's Alma Angels. But really, my mission was, you know, my only real KPI that I measure myself with is to get more female founders funded. Yeah. And I, as an individual, can only do so much, right? So to scale, Alma made a lot of sense to scale an individual activity and to create more people, more women who were doing the same as I was doing. Over the last 18 months, we've invested $4.5 million off of a free Slack community at Alma.
That's so awesome. And I mean, it sounds to me like you really, like, for you, really, the angel investing was a really transformative step to take, right? Because you weren't in that scene so much before, right?
100%, I wasn't. And, you know, I did some small angel checks. I did some advisory. Mm. In fact, one of my second angel investment was a fintech company that went public earlier this year. So that was a personal investment I made. So really, I would say the last 3 years have been quite crucial in my angel investing journey, although I have been doing advising women for much longer in the ecosystem. But when I first started advising women, people were like, what are you doing? Where are these female founders? Not sure what you're trying to do here. But obviously that has changed a lot, even though funding is still hard. At least it's more topical now than when I started doing it. You know, I have a son and a daughter, and I really would want equal opportunity for them as they grow. And I think we're very far away from that world right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you seeing more, also more female business angel appearing in the UK, also through initiatives like Alma?
I mean, there are a few syndicates, right? So definitely there are a few syndicates who are, where there are women, maybe slightly older women also, you know, who have capital investing. At Alma, you see women of all shapes, sizes, and ages, where, you know, we have young women who are interested in learning about angel investing, and we have older women who already have the capital. So definitely we have created lots of new angel investors, at least Alma has, in the UK ecosystem. And I'm sure there are others who are doing it through a syndicate type activity.
Yeah. I mean, because what we're seeing in our little microcosm in Berlin is so cool, just through creating more exchange, creating people a place for people to go to find out how to do it. It just makes such an impact. And we're seeing just so many more women getting into angel investing. And that's just also one of the reasons why we're doing this podcast, because it's just, we just see for them, it really enriches their lives.
100%, not just for men, also not just women, I think also for men. We have some, you know, amazing male almas who found like an Alma family, which I like absolutely love. But and I think it's also busting that myth, right? I think women have traditionally not invested because there's this myth that you need to be really wealthy to be able to angel invest. And to be honest, we've written much smaller checks from Alma as well. We've used a part of attorney structure where women have been able to, you know, contribute smaller sums of money. And also breaking this myth that, you know, breaking the old, not just a myth, but, you know, deals getting done in this old boys club, and trying to change that, and have more access to deal flow, and also good access to good deal flow. Through we have some amazing VCs who are investing and as angels as well, and they bring in deals to Alma, such as Eileen, you know, at Passion Capital. She'll bring a deal in that she's investing in a female founder, and she'll bring it in and she'll say, I would love to open this up for Alma's.
Yeah. That's so cool to work together with the funds as well to bring the angel side to the deals. I mean, because this is something that we're seeing a lot now, because the VCs move so fast now that sometimes there haven't been any angels in the deals so far. So then they have their term sheet from the VC, and then they go out and get the angels to fill up the round and get the expertise in.
Yeah, definitely. And I also get calls, by the way, from VCs now who say, we'd love to have, the founder wants a more diverse cap table. Yeah. Can you send us your female angels?
Yeah. I mean, that's also why we're doing our fund, because it's just, there is that, and people do ask for it. And I think it's, for anyone that wants to get involved, it's just, it's a cool opportunity right now. And I think you need to like position yourself pretty clearly on who you are and what you can do. But then you can get such good referrals in, and it's such a great opportunity for anyone that has something to offer.
Yeah, especially at a time when capital is, a commodity, right?
Yeah,
I think, having a value add, which, and women tend to be very collaborative, tend to love working with their companies, tend to, bring a lot more than capital, I feel, in terms of time, et cetera, and resource and connections. I think it's a great time.
Yeah. And I mean, we, especially in the very early phases, we always advise all the founders to, if someone brings a lot of value add, just don't decline them because their ticket is too small for what 100%. They thought was a good idea. And I think people are really cottoning onto that. So for a while, I feel there were so many like that said, oh, I won't take any tickets under 50,000. But that's people understanding that it's more about the value add, especially in these early phases, and that it's really worth taking small tickets.
Yeah, most companies are seeing that. I did have a conversation recently with a company team, and I actually couldn't believe it because I wanted to invest, 20,000.
Yeah.
And I said, I'll open it. I'll bring it to Alma's. Guess what? It's a business that is, it was a business that was, the audience was women. So let's put it that way. So they were trying to build a business for females. And I said, you're not based in the UK. You're opening an office in the UK. Our community is amazing when it comes to, value add angels and females, which is your audience. And I'll put in 20K and let's open it up and bring it to Alma. And, we can do a part of attorney structure and get to your minimum check size. I think it was like 100K or something, or 50K, I can't remember. But they weren't open to it at all. And I just couldn't understand it. I was just like, and the fact that they don't have a UK office and want to open a UK office.
Yeah. So I think this is also like a piece of advice, for founders that might be listening, but also like to future business angels, you just need to pitch your value add, and then in most cases you will get taken. And if you don't, you don't. Okay.
Yeah.
But I really think it's just, I just think angels are so cool because for founders, because even if they only do a small check, they still will work for free.
100%.
Not work that you measure in time. It's work that you manage in opening up the networks and their brains for you. So I just think I'm so happy that more and more founders are taking really small tickets. I even just saw a deal. We had a deal in our angel portfolio, and they just, even at a 50 million valuation, they still took one angel in that I think put in like 5,000.
Yeah.
And I was so happy to see that, because I think it's just it was a really good move on their side, even though a lot of people would say, like, why would you do that? So,
and then the other thing is angels not getting prorated, by the way. That's the other thing I say. I've also turned down a deal in the past where they wanted me in there. I was the only angel that they were bringing in, and then they weren't giving me any prorated rights. So I said, I'm sorry, but I won't do this.
Yeah, I guess that's actually another point. I think in general, like, this is something, like, when I check a contract, when I jump in on a deal and I check a contract, the first thing I check is I search for the lead investor's name in the contract and make sure that they don't get any special rights.
Yeah. The lead does usually get some special rights, but yes, I'm fighting for those rights for myself as well.
Yeah.
But at least prorate, because these are long-dated investments, and it could be 6 years, it could be 7 years. And do I really want 20K stuck in a company if I can't invest as a follower or not? Especially if it's doing well, I would want that right? And I just don't understand why certain companies just don't do that.
Yeah. So I think, So I think that's also kind of a really important advice for people getting into it, is to say, like, yeah, make sure you get your pro rata rights. Make sure you just don't.
Your information rights. I mean, in my case, obviously, I'm very close to the founders, and they're on a WhatsApp basis with me and constantly messaging me. But, it might not be the case for you. And it's very important that you know what's going on with your companies.
Yeah. Totally. So, but this actually brings us to a good point. So how do you keep contact with your companies?
So I'm in touch with them on WhatsApp. They message me. In fact, right before right before I got on this call, I got a call from one of the founders. They're closing their seed and they said, can't get a hold of this investor. Do you know their details? You know how I can reach them? And then yesterday I had another company reach out to me and she said, they wanted a fund in. And she said, I've written this email. Can you read it for me? I want to send it to the fund. What do you think? Should I send it? And I said, absolutely. I love this email. Please send it. And then she sent me a message yesterday evening saying, guess what? They're in. So, I'm in touch with them all the time.
Yeah.
Literally all the time. And I say all the time, I mean all the time.
Yeah. And I think this is actually the cool thing. Like, and that's why it's so great that we have these communication channels like WhatsApp now, where it's just so easy to have like a low touch communication. So, and I think there are like these kind of, and everyone needs to find their way to communicate with their angels. Because there's some people that do like regular calls. There's some just to keep it on a more loose basis. And I don't think there's one way for people to do it. It's a relationship. So you need to find out what works both sides, I think.
100%. And, there are founders who prefer to then set up a call in the calendar. Everybody has those as well. But, as long as you're in touch with them, it's their time is, very precious, much more precious than my time probably, and whatever suits them. But all I want them to know is I'm around when they need me and never to hesitate to call me.
Yeah. What would be your top advice for people wanting to get into angel investing?
I mean, I think the first thing is to obviously... it's much more fun and you learn a lot more by like doing it with like-minded people. So, communities like Alma and Oxo, et cetera, help a lot, obviously. Yeah. Just like anything else, like cycling or driving, I think you learn best by doing it. And sometimes it is the more expensive way because your first deal might not be the best deal ever, but you just learn a lot more as you go, which is why learning with other people where you don't know all bits of the puzzle is obviously better because it brings diversity of thought into the process and diversity of skill set. Angel investing is high risk. I think when you write that check, you should be willing to say goodbye to that money. So, and it is a lot about the founders and I often see lots of analysis paralysis, but you're really thinking that it is a lot about the founders in the early days and of course the market. And sometimes the market timing is so relevant, right? But a good founder in a bad market will somehow still figure it out.
Yeah.
As opposed to and sometimes a bad founder in a good market also gets lucky. But really, I think it's a lot about the founders.
Yes, absolutely.
Also, I think it's about diversification, right? I just prefer to write those smaller checks in the beginning and then double down. Or at least you want to have a large enough portfolio because it's such a high risk.
Yes, I think this is something that's really important that a lot of people get wrong. So I think when you start angel investing, you really need to like take a view over a few years and make kind of a little calculation. How much can you put into the whole thing over the next 3 years? And then you should target to get like minimum double digit number of deals in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've even spoken to some, when I started out, I spoke to a lot of people about it and there were some that are really aggressive and say like, you need to do 50 or stop. But, I think if you aim for kind of, 10 to 15, you're in a really great spot. Or even if you just want to start with doing a couple, but then obviously if you don't diversify, it's a greater financial risk.
100%.
Yeah. So I would really love to hear from you as well. How do you, so when you first meet founders, what are kind of, how do you find out whether they're good founders? If you say it's so much about the good founder, how do you train?
You asked me the million-dollar question. Usually I'm really excited in that first call. There's so many angel checks I've written just in the first call, right?
Yeah.
I'm just really excited about what they're building. I'm really excited about the passion, the mission, the vision. I can feel it in that first call.
Yeah.
And I think it's tough when it's like, when you don't know, right? Either you know right away. So there are also cases where I know right away, this is not for me. Whatever it might be, it might not be the founder, it might be the market, it might be the sector, it might be something, right? But usually I very quickly know. And sometimes I write a check and I'm like, do I even have the cash to write this check? Sometimes when I'm doing quick angel personal tickets, just very excited about it. And I think the ones that are in the middle where you're not sure is when you really need to dig a little deeper. And then, when I am doing my Atomico checks, I very much follow a process where I do founder reference calls, mm-hmm. where I talk to other people. I go on LinkedIn and I'm like, it doesn't have to be a long process, but I would like to know a little bit more about the founder, if they've worked somewhere or what their leadership skills are. Can they motivate other people? You know, those are the kinds of things that I'm looking for. But also I look at their backgrounds, right? What have they done in the past? Have they built and scaled? And having said that, I've invested in lots of green founders.
Yeah.
I've invested in, Planera, which is a flushable sanitary pad. I was a mentor to them at Imperial. They were at Imperial when I first met them. And they're raising their seed round now. I've invested in Shellworks. She was at Imperial, emailed me cold. And I think she had worked at Apple before, but she did have work experience as opposed to, the other guys who were, really fresh. In their master's program. So I have invested, but I do tend to also look for some, what have they done in the past? What have they built? But, you often find that female founders are not second time founders. How many female founders do you meet that are second time? So if I had to have that lens, then I would never invest in anybody.
Actually, Deepali,
right?
This is one of the things that making us so happy right now with our investments with the fund, that we're actually seeing a lot of second-time founders now, and female founders, second-time, third-time female founders. And those are if you look at the usual crazy rounds that are happening with the guys, they're all experienced founders. So, and I'm so excited now that so many women come to the point where they are on their second company.
That's amazing. But I don't think we've seen that as much in the UK as maybe in Germany, because I have funded a lot of first-time female founders. And I think that is a bias, actually, in the VC industry when you're looking for that second-time female founder or second-time underrepresented founder, and then just not enough of them out there.
Now, we've invested in a lot of first-time founders as well, but it's just, this is one of the things that's making me so happy that there are actually a lot of second times now, and it's cool, and because it means
You definitely need to change
things moving.
Need to change the gender wealth gap, the gender pension gap, the gender pay gap, all of that, right? So
you
definitely need those second time and third time female founders.
But I like that you when you opened up your response on the founder question, that you talk about excitement, because I think in the end that's actually what it comes down to. So we have this one sanity check where one of my sanity checks is if I wake up after I had the first call, and if I wake up the next day and I don't in the first half an hour think about the company, then it's probably not
good.
That
means you're not excited. 100%. Yeah. That means, you sleep over it, especially the ones that are in the middle, I sleep over them and I'm if in a few days I'm really not that excited, and I'm I don't think about them as much. It's not meant to be. But, I do also look when there are metrics. I look at metrics. I'm talking about founders. I've invested in two founders this year that actually have nothing. They were really sole founders, pre-product, pre-revenue, pre-anything, right? So in that case, it is a lot about the founders. But once you have a product or an MVP, then I will look at the metrics and I will, do some more work around it, as opposed to just saying that, I'm just going to look at the founders.
What are your, what would you say have been your biggest sort of mistakes that you would like spare others from making?
Gosh, so I'm sure I have a huge anti-portfolio too. I'm sure there are lots of mistakes and I still don't know, right? Because I'm still learning. But I think it's never rush to do the first deal. Even though you learn by doing, I think the first one, I really think I never had an Alma, right? When I started doing it, I was doing it on my own. I used my husband as a substitute for Alma when it came to fintech. We look at a lot of fintech, insurtech things together. But I would love to have people around me, and I would really highly recommend you, join a community like that, because it's hugely beneficial. I was on an Alma call, I think, 3 weeks ago. It was a health business we were looking at, and there were 15 female Almas on the call, and they were all health experts bringing in different, from different parts of health. And I was this is so powerful, because the questions were amazing. And I was I would never be able to come up with those questions on my own. And, it's an amazing learning experience as well.
Yeah, this is one of the things that's so fun when you do DD with other people and you're whoa, that's a good question.
Exactly. Exactly.
The question that you would never think of is usually the best.
Yeah. And that's the most interesting thing about angel investing is, right, that you're always learning. You're always trying to learn about new industries, new business ideas, always trying to play catch up with the entrepreneur. You're never going to know as much as them, but that is the most interesting. And learning from other people around you. So I would say that, you know, having a community of people, or even if it's friends, you don't want to join anything, you know, like-minded people. You also feel like with Alma, you also feel like you're contributing, right? You're on a mission to change the world. And I think that's huge. I mean, investing $4.5 million off of a free Slack community, tell me any fund, you know, most people will have a legal structure and fundraise and, you know, be doing all that before they can deploy $4.5 million of capital. Here we started, and 18 months later, we deployed $4.5 million of capital.
It's amazing. It's so cool. It's so cool. And I think this importance of having your gang is just incredible, because I mean, this is how I got started with Gesa and Fabiola. And it, for me, that was the most important thing, is to have this gang together. And suddenly you build momentum, you build a brand, like some sort of brand is maybe too much, but you know, you get a clearer positioning, you see more things, you can talk about things, and you make decisions faster. It's
100%.
I think like for me, probably the two top tips would be, don't put too much money into your first ticket.
Yeah.
Because everyone I speak to put too much money in their first ticket. And the other one is this kind of get yourself a gang and get going and build a community. Because this is also like the coolest thing about it, is that you get to meet so many people and talk about interesting subjects. And it's such a great way.
And also make friends along the way.
Yeah.
You know, now I feel like when I come to Germany, I have so many friends, all of you. Like I just met you guys through, you know, angel journeys, and I met Georgie, and now I met Katia, and I met you ladies. And now I have like so many women, and I feel like I go to all these amazing cities, and they're all these friends of mine who are angels, essentially, that I met in other cities.
Yes, it's really cool. It's really cool. And we actually talked about it with someone today, and we were talking about the dinners that we used to do with the Evangelistas before Corona. And we said they were actually the nicest female networking events, because it was all women that usually don't go to female networking events.
Exactly.
But there we suddenly were at a female networking event, but we really, really enjoyed it. It was the best one. So I think that's, yeah. But maybe that's actually a nice note to end it on. Maybe can you share one of your favorite anecdotes from your angel journey? Do you have any nice, funny, lightning anecdotes?
Journey. I will say that there was a really funny email we got at Alma. It was like one of the craziest emails of the pitches. We get so much stuff in Alma. And I tweeted about this, and I was like, we got a pitch from like two guys, right, who wrote to us and said, you know, we want to pitch this to the Alma community. And I was like, I wrote back and I said, you know, this is only for like female or mixed teams, this community. And he wrote me back and he said, I'm male, but my favorite sex is female. And I wonder if that qualifies me. Sorry to say this. And I was like, did you really write that? I mean, I'm just amazed. I thought it's really, of course, it's funny, but it's also ridiculous that somebody would write that. Yeah. So sorry, I had to share that story, because I thought it was quite funny, but I think completely, anyways, annoying as well. But yeah, I did tweet about it. But, you know, so many amazing founders that I've met, and, you know, they've become friends now, and we talk about lots of things, and home and family and being a working mother. And, you know, really, I feel it's one of the most, I mean, I think it is now synonymous with me, angel investing. Mm. It has become a part of me, and I've become a part of it. And, nice. And I love that.
Yeah, that's so nice. So nice. And Dipali, you really give your whole heart. And this is, I think, what everyone that works with you sees, and anyone that you advise and that is in touch with you in a professional capacity, it just really, we feel that it's you're in there with your whole heart and your whole self, and it's just a really lovely gift to everyone that gets in touch with you.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me, and thank you for your friendship.
Thank you, Dipali.
Okay.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.